Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on NerdyTalk do not reflect those of Anime Herald. Due to strong language, listener discretion is advised. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
Good evening and happy new year, listeners. Welcome to NerdyTalk, the only podcast saying, where the fuck is our hoverboards? I'm Mike Ferrer, and I'm being joined by Matt Brown and Anthony Simpson. How you guys doing?
Going.
You know, cool. Except not, because I'm in Florida.
Yeah, lucky you.
Yeah, the only one that doesn't have to deal with snow and minus 2 degree weather.
Well, I'll get plenty of that when I go to New York City at the end of the month.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Anyway, in the time between our last show, the last special, and today, we've entered a brand new anime season, and with that comes some new shows to watch. So I want to kind of get in touch with you guys, see which shows you're watching this time around.
I'll go first. I'm actually not watching a huge amount of new shows. I think this was actually, surprising for me, I actually have only dropped one show that I've watched. Out of all the ones I've checked out, I've only dropped one show. Which for me is like a miracle usually, because I'm dropping like, usually like half of what I'm watching. I'm just gonna talk about the new stuff I'm watching, not sequels. So new shows I'm checking out are Assassination Classroom, Death Parade, Yuri Kuma Arashi, and Yatterman Knight. Oh, I should say that's as far as new shows. Then like the sequels, like Al No Zero's sequel and the Tokyo Ghoul sequel. Like those I'm also checking out too.
Right on, right on. Yeah, I'm surprisingly late this season myself. I mean, the stuff I picked up has been either sequels like Shirobako or Al No Zero, or, I mean, I've had a couple shows I picked up that were okay or stuff that hasn't really wowed me. Like, started watching Military. I tried giving Konkole a watch. Really, they should show that to sick people. It's so hilariously bad.
I know some people who are enjoying it. So I just didn't want to check it out. It's not for me.
Oh, man. I couldn't stop laughing once I saw this one point in the show. Like, I want to say early in the episode, it shows the main character walk into a room, and she's kind of greeting the billions of other characters, you know. One that comes right up to her and says, "Do you like nighttime?" She's like, "Yeah." She's like, "So do I. Nighttime is the best." I mean, it seemed like something that was ripped out of a low-rent PS1 game. It was so funny.
That reminds me of an old Adam Sandler sketch. The nighttime is the right time.
Mm. Okay, actually, I should be correct. I mean, I did like Strike Witches, and that's similar. I mean,
yeah. This is kind of like Strike Witches by committee in a lot of ways from what I've seen. Yeah. So, what do you expect, though? It's one of the most popular franchises in Japan. They had to be careful.
Yeah. I mean, the pre-orders, I'm told, are like doing really well, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Konkole. It's gonna do well.
Well, I mean, if they did, because I thought about this a whole bunch, and how is it gonna put this? The way that they adapted that show, between it being, like, really successful and everyone, like, just dropping the pre-orders, like, I don't think if you put those two, like, areas next to each other, I don't think you could put a piece of paper between them. I think that's how close it probably is.
Yeah, true. Other than that, I really haven't had a lot of time to really get into the season. Unfortunately, it's been a very hectic time because we've had a lot going on for, you know, news and stuff. And I also have a new distraction in the house with the PS4.
Mm. Oh, finally got a PS4.
Yeah, I finally kind of dove into it.
Mm.
I did have a chance to start one other show this season so far. It is Cute High Earth Defense Club Love.
Oh, now, what are your thoughts on that one?
What the fuck was I watching?
You really... Yeah. You really are a glutton for punishment.
I watched that, and I'm like, man, that's not funny. Like, I wanted to like it. I was kind of disappointed, because I legitimately was looking forward to that show. And then I watched it, and I'm like, that just wasn't funny.
Yeah,
I mean, I know humor is subjective and whatnot. Hmm. But just like, I didn't laugh, and I'm like, so I dropped it, and that was the only show I dropped.
Not only that, but it was also weird for the sake of being weird, if you notice.
Yeah, well, the only thing I really noticed out of it is that one of the characters looked exactly like Locke on Stratus from Gundam 00 in there. I'm like, did he just, like, show up in the show for some reason?
Oh, man.
I didn't like that Wombat's voice annoyed me. He was... I didn't like his voice. I did like that, like, what, Green Porcupine or something, or whatever that was.
Yeah, it's just, it wasn't that good, and I agree. It's like, I was watching it, it's like, and I'm sitting there, it's like, what the fuck am I watching? This makes no, I mean, I was at a loss of words. Like, I was literally speechless at points by how off the wall this was.
Yeah, it was not very good. But again, yeah. Comedy is very subjective, so.
Yeah.
Now, there was one other show I actually didn't mention that I had started on last week, but I just put on hold today, and that was The Rolling Girls. This was a show that Gainax would have made years ago, because it just is kind of it has like that Gainax feel to it. But like it's very colorful. Like we're like talking to some points, it's like No Game No Life type coloring. But then like the writing just wasn't there, and I'm like, I don't want to drop this. I'm just going to kind of put it in the back burner. Maybe I'll get, you know, later in the year, I'll come back to it. Because it seems like a show that might be better to watch a whole bunch instead of week to week.
Absolutely.
Actually, out of all the stuff I'm watching, I will talk about the one that actually did surprise me. And that was Yatterman Night, or Yoru no Yatterman. Now, I've known nothing of that franchise. And I wasn't even going to watch it. It wasn't on my radar, because I'm just like, I got enough. This isn't going to be a heavy, you know, heavy pick for me. And everyone kept saying, this is so good. You know, it's just so good. I'm like, well, do you have to know anything of the franchise? And they're like, no. And I watched that first episode, and I have to say, that was really good. I mean, like I said, I knew nothing of the Yatterman franchise, but I was able to watch that first episode and not feel like anything's going over my head.
I'll definitely give that one a look.
Yeah, because it's... I'll give kind of a little bit about it. So, it starts off, and it looks like it's just going to be this cute slice of life show. And then it does a complete 180 by having the moon explode and come down and blow up a bunch of stuff. Like, one of them hits Mount Fuji and just causes, like, this massive explosion. So, it zooms ahead of the future, and it's on this island, and this lady's like, oh, she's at this grave site. She's like, oh, honey, I'm going to take care of her kid. And so, she has this... birth of this girl named Leopold. So she's reading this book about how Yatterman defeated the gang. I think they're called Donbaro or something. I can't remember the name of them now. How they beat them all these years ago and everyone lived in peace. So across from where they live is the Outer City, which used to be a place. The way the show calls it is Hokkaido, which is supposed to be Hokkaido. And so one day this girl goes into this area that she's not supposed to. And finds this painting of the bad guys from the original series. And they find out that her mom, and basically her two people that live there with her, these two guys, are all descendants of these people, the bad guys. But because of what happened that their ancestors did, their past transgressions, they're forced to live in poverty on this island. And basically mom tells the girl, well, you know, don't be bad like your ancestors were, behave yourself. So when the girl turns 9, mom falls deathly ill, and she needs medicine, but because they're so poor in the island, they don't have any medicine. So the girl decides, I'm going to go to Yatter City and get this medicine. So her and her, I guess, mom's friends, her descendants of the guys that were the main girl's henchmen from the original show, all get real close to this island. This big wall comes up with the Yatterman symbol on it, and she sees the Yatterman descendants. The girl's like, oh, Mr. Yatterman, my mom's sick. Well, they start shooting at her. And saying, well, if you don't have a pass, you can't come in. So they turn around and leave, and their boat blows up. So they get back to the island, mom's girl dies because she didn't get the medicine. And now she's all upset because these people that she looked up to and admired found out they're basically giant dicks. And decides to revive the gang from the original show to fight Yatterman. So basically stop them from being bad people. Yeah, like I said, it had some humorous moments to it. The Funimation list is a comedy. I'm not sure how much of a comedy this is going to be. It looked good. There's some points were kind of iffy, but other than that, I was just really blown away by it. Just, again, like I said, no prior knowledge of the franchise, and just how I felt, how easy it was to get into the... I mean, I've read a little bit about since I've seen it, and they make some references. Like, the one guy from the original show, he had, like, a thing for high school girls, and his descendant sort of has sort of the same thing, but he's never met a high schooler. He just knows, oh, I just... He's like, I just get a bubbly feeling thinking about that thought. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, I do recommend checking it out.
Awesome. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I ain't watching shit. In fact, I think anime is terrible, and I'm done.
Okay, Matt quits anime. Show's over.
Yep, see ya. Yeah, as if that would happen. I was... Anthony mentioned Rolling Girls, so I might as well start with that. The first episode, it was not what I expected to see. I guess, like, all of Japan has been divided up into, you know, autonomous prefectures, and there's these fights between people with superpowers, almost like Sentai fights, to resolve disputes, and nobody else is allowed to fight. That was kind of, you know, okay, I thought I was tuning in to watch a show about girls on motorcycles. so that was kind of a surprise. You know, they established this weird premise, and it's almost like, I want to say the fights are almost, you know, Kill la Kill inspired in their absurdity. There's no lewd poses or anything like that, but you know, just the weapons and stuff are really outrageous, and some of the moves. Anyway, the show is about a girl named Nozomi who is helping out one of these superpowered girls, and you know, there's a little bit of a plot at the beginning where their fighter wears a mask, and she doesn't know who it is and finds out, and like she's all wanting to be independent now, and as it so happens, the two their fighter and another girl who was fighting for a different prefecture both get hurt, and there's nobody left for like a month or so to resolve disputes. And so I think at this point the plot is finally starting at the end of the second episode, where Nozomi and some of her friends go off on motorcycles to try and do something about it. So I don't know. I'm not terribly interested in the show yet, but I kind of have faith that it could get better because Wit Studios making the show, and they did a great job with Attack on Titan, so I'll give it a few episodes.
Well, yeah, because this is our first original series. Like I said, this looks like something Gainax would have made years ago. Because it just has that feel to it. At least the first episode did.
Yeah, a little bit. It doesn't have the same kind of outrageousness and fan service shows had. But
oh, yeah. I mean, well, you had a person with a giant safety pin finding someone in a green Sentai outfit. I mean,
yeah.
If that's not outrageous enough, I don't know what is.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's what I was, why I was kind of alluding it to it being almost a Kill la Kill sense of humor without the lewdness. Because it's definitely some ridiculous weapons in that show, too.
Well, I got dropped Kill la Kill after episode 2, so... But from what I've seen of it, yeah, you're right.
Let's see. And the other thing that I wanted to mention was... I'm definitely eating up the second series of Do Ra Ra Ra, Ra 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 Ra, however many Ra's. Anybody who was familiar with the first series is going to be... They're going to find familiar ground with this one. It kind of pretty much continues where the first show left off. You know, I think that's great. And Now, for anybody who's not familiar with DRRR, and is familiar with FLCL, think FLCL extended. All the characters are like bored all the time, as if nothing is going on, and there's all this crazy shit happening at all times. I like shows like this, and I'm not sure if there's any other way to describe it.
Yeah, it's definitely shaping up to be an interesting anime season. Mostly because it sounds like our lists are nowhere near as patched as they've been in the past 2 or 3, which is both good and bad. I mean, it gives us a chance to kind of catch up on the stuff that we missed, while at the same time, it also means there isn't as much that's worth watching right now.
Yeah, because some of the stuff I'm pushing off till a later time, like Shonen Holly Old Holly Sage for 50, I'm probably going to watch that next season because it'll be all done by then. Then you have stuff like the Fafner sequel. I'm just going to wait till that's all done and probably watch it, because I didn't watch Fafner just till a few years ago. And I don't know if I want to sit and watch it week to week. But it is good for me that it's sort of lighter, because I want to start working on my backlog. Like, I just, the other day, I actually started watching the first season of Free. Because I actually tried to watch it when it came out. I watched the first episode, and I'm just like, not feeling it. And then I decided, just not too long ago, I'm like, I'll give it a second shot.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, like I said, I've been kind of stuck in the news end of things lately, but I'm probably going to start digging into my Blu-ray backlog in the very near future.
I'm thankful there's not that much to go through this season, because I watched a lot of stuff last season.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, because the last few seasons seem real heavy, and this one just seems a bit light. And so far, from what I'm seeing already for next season, it's looking even light too. But I'll wait till I get a little closer before I make any kind of comment on that.
Yeah, likewise, because there's always going to be more announcements as the season goes on.
Yeah.
Moving on, Ponycan USA announced their first Blu-ray release. They're going to be releasing Denki Guy in DVD Blu-ray combo packs as singles for the low price of $89.98. You can own a copy of Volume 1, which contains the first 4 episodes of the show. Now, I have to ask all of you guys, are they on coke?
Question.
No, I don't think they are. But I do know one thing. Now Mike knows when he can start buying Denki Guy.
Man, fuck Denki Guy.
you know you want it all.
I had a feeling that they were going to go basically a similar route to Aniplex when they said that, this stuff's going to come out in April. Well, Yuki Yuna is a Hero, its last Blu-ray in Japan doesn't come out till May. So when I saw that, I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to be like the way NISA does it. And I'm like, yeah, we're going more Aniplex route. And then obviously they're going that, like, I call it the way somebody on my Twitter feed wrote, it's that they sort of looked at the Aniplex model and said, okay, we can do that. But they didn't understand the Aniplex model. They just sort of looked at it, copied it, but not understood what made their way of doing it work.
Yeah, Aniplex gets the stuff that people want.
I mean, now, to be fair, you are getting this, you know, shortly after the Japanese release. So that's part of also the reason why it's pricey. You're getting it now as opposed to, say, a year or two later, which then that'd be a different case.
Right, but as a consumer, I mean, I understand that it's because of the proximity of the Japanese release, but as a consumer, I don't give a shit. If I see $90 for 4 episodes, I'm going to say they can go cram up their assholes.
Well, again, it also depends on the type of show that they're... Because let's take... Well, I'm going to have to analyze Aniplex's model here again for reasons. They do those types of single releases, but they do it for shows they know they can sell them. For shows that have that kind of demand. Where in the stuff that doesn't, they just give, you know, like a complete collection, unfortunately, on DVD. Like they did to say both seasons Silver Spoon and Vivid Red Operation. But here it just seems like Denki Guy didn't seem to be popular in Japan, it didn't sell well, and Yuki Yuna is a Hero, I haven't heard too many good things about that. Only that it was okay, and then the ending was kind of kind of wasn't very good.
Yeah, I lost interest in it by episode 7 or 8, so it kind of petered out.
It kind of seems to me, like I said, it's sort of they looked at the Aniplex model and went, we can do that. But that just, like I said, they just sort of copied it, but they didn't like try to understand the model.
I don't think they considered Aniplex in particular. They're just another BVUSA rolling in and thinking they can charge the same prices they do in Japan.
Well, yeah, but those can work again, but you have to have the shows that can do that.
BVUSA
tried to do it with shows that were old, and not that they weren't terrible shows, but, you know, doing that for a show in the 80s, selling it for, you know, whatever amount of money for, say, like, Aniplex prices is not the same as saying selling a recent show that's popular at that kind of price.
I think the only reason Aniplex gets away with what they do is because they market the shit out of their stuff.
Well, yeah, but
which
they also
probably costs a lot more money than they ever make back.
Yeah, but they also, too, are... Well, they only have... Well, Aniplex USA only has a couple... It has, like, 5 employees. So they only don't have a lot of people working for them. But, too, they also get shows that they know that can sell real well in that format when they do those sort of lesser episode count type releases. They know they have shows that can sell that well. That's why there's ones they give it to them. And stuff that they know that, you know, it's probably popular, but not as much. They just, you know, do a whole thing and then do it, just say DVD only, like they did for Silver Spoon, which I'm sure is a good show, but that wasn't going to sell like Monica or any of the Monogatari franchise stuff.
Very true. Very true.
But, you know, other this thing sort of reminds me of, and I know this is kind of stretching a bit. Have you guys seen the original Star Trek?
Mm-hmm.
The TV series? Well, do you remember an episode? It was real early in the first season. It was the Squire Gothos. There was this guy, supposedly this god, and he was obsessed with Earth. Well, he recreated stuff from Earth on this planet. Like, he could see stuff and recreate it, like fire, food, or weapons. But when he would recreate the stuff, since he actually never experienced it, he didn't have, like, it wasn't, like, complete, like, you'd have fire, but there'd be no heat. But you'd have food, but no flavor. And that's sort of when I looked at how Pony Can USA's releases. I looked at that, and I'm like, you know, that kind of reminds me of this. They sort of looked at it, but didn't understand it, and just decided, well, let's just do it. Which, I mean, it might work if they get stuff that's more popular, but... I mean, I don't think Yukio News a Hero and Denki Guy are real popular shows.
No, I mean, Denki Guy had its hardcore following, but it never really caught on outside of that. And, yeah, I mean, it's like they're getting this B-grade stuff, and they're trying to market it as the creme de la creme.
Yeah, it's sort of like what Bandai Visual was doing with, you know, like older, like 80s shows and trying to cram them, which is fine. Yeah. I'm not saying those shows were terrible they had. But I'm like, yeah, you're probably not going to get away with that pricing. And it didn't work for them. I mean...
Yeah, it forced them out of business.
Like, yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happens to Pony Can, because I don't see them changing the model anytime soon. They're going to dig in.
Now,
I
would want
to say... I think they're here because they think the model works. Because, you know, and maybe it's true that, you know, they think because Aniplex is sticking around somehow... That they can just roll in and do the same thing, but
they don't have the shows to back it up, though.
No,
right.
See, like I said, that could work if you have the shows. Like Aniplex has the shows that can do that. Pony Canyon doesn't have that. Pony Can USA, they don't have that.
No, and even this season they've got the one I just said. What the hell did I just watch? High Earth.
Yeah, the one that supposedly them and Funimation both have it, which is kind of odd.
Yeah, Cute High Earth Defense Club Love.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, that one I'm sure is going to have its, you know, its followers. And I mean, hey, if you liked it, great.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not for me, but... I'm going to talk about Nisa a bit here. Out of all the premium ones that I've seen, I actually like their model the best. Even though, you don't get it right away. You know, you get it maybe a year or two down the road... But I like their premium model because even if you don't get the whole thing right off the bat, like I did with Toradora, as I bought both sets, the original one, they had the big long boxes with the big art books. They were nice releases. Kate Barn at first, they had some problems, you know, and then they got better.
Yeah, I mean...
And I think their model well, at least the way they do it works. I mean, they're obviously different because they're a game company, but they also just happen to release anime.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. It's pretty much no risk for them because that's not... they could just fold up their anime tent and go home and they still have their game sales.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, because the games, because the anime stuff's like, I look at it similarly. Like Viz is manga first, anime second. That's sort of like with Nisa is, you know, games first, anime second. But I like the way they release their premium releases, even though I only have just, you know, Toradora from them. Yeah. Their releases, I like them.
I adore their releases. I have like 7 or 8 of them. I have I have Persona, I have Bunny Drop, I have Daily Lives of High School Budgets, I have Card Captor Sakura, and now I've got Love Live coming. So I've got like 6 or 7 of them.
Yeah, Love Live's one I want to get when they just do a standard edition, if they do one. I'm sure they will. I don't know if they'll ever do a standard Blu-ray for Card Captor Sakura. I doubt it.
I think they will. It'll probably take a little longer because they have to sell through what they have with the premiums, but...
Yeah, which is fine. I can wait. I mean, I'll get that. I'll definitely get both sets, seasons of Love Live when they do standard editions for those. But yeah, I think their model, at least the way they do premiums, are actually, I think, are the best.
Yeah, I mean...
In terms of me.
I mean, you pay a bit more for the final product, but it's presented nicely.
Yeah.
You get a lot with it. Like, you get those nice chipboard books. You get the hardcover art books. You get a good amount of extra features. I mean, like, some of the Aniplex stuff, your extra features are quite literally textless opening and textless closing.
Yeah, which I could get from, like, a Sentai release or a Funimation release.
Or YouTube.
Yeah. Well,
legal
release.
I know. I'm being catty here. But, yeah, I mean, it's like they at least try and go the extra mile to justify that extra 10, 15 bucks a pain.
Yeah, and like you know? I said, I think their model... I mean, Aniplex, like I said, they know what they're doing, and their model works for their thing. Unfortunately, like I said, Pony Cane, it hasn't... They seem to have... They copied it, but didn't seem to... You know, just didn't seem to understand it. And, you know, maybe eventually they will get it right, but the way I'm seeing it, I don't think it will. I mean, if I'm wrong, you know what? I'll eat crow if I'm wrong. I'll admit, you know, hey, I'm just wrong.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'll gladly admit that if I'm wrong, because we're just looking into the crystal ball right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe
it'll be interesting to see what kind of presence they have at conventions going into this year and whatnot. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. Because, yeah. I know
Aniplex... Because Aniplex has to do a lot of, you know, hey, look at us.
Oh, yeah,
Even though they have strong titles, they still have to do a lot of that to sell them.
Well, yeah.
Aniplex goes above and beyond, too. Like, they're at every single convention. They're at Anime Boston. They're at ASEAN. They're at A-Con. They're at, I think, SoccerCon. They're, like, everywhere. And they always host a panel. They always host, have a dealers room presence. They are out there and mobilized, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and they also, you know, they're also there with Sony artists for music performances and the like. So there's definitely a lot of, symbiotic things going on.
Oh yeah, I'm not denying that, but I mean, I'm just saying they get out there. Like they even if they don't hit everything, they hit at least the major conventions. Like, I hope to see Pony Canyon trying to do the same thing because. Well,
yeah, because they have because their main thing in Japan is they also have a big music label too.
Right.
Like I'm trying to look here. I'm trying to think here anything I recognize. Let's see here.
If I remember correctly, wasn't Pony Canyon like two record labels merged together, something like that?
Yeah, that's how that name came about. They have a handful of popular artists. They're not. I guess I would say they're a major label, but they're a little bit smaller than some of the others.
Well, they're major in Japan. I mean, I know they...
Yes, Japan is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay, my bad.
I was just thinking, you know, we can make fun of this Pony Can release, but I'm interested to see what their second release is going to look like, how they respond to the predictably poor sales of this.
Well, we'll know once Cute Hire at the Fence Club is done, we'll have a good idea, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll know probably, I'd say by Probably by, I'm guessing probably by September we might know. Maybe August, because that's about, no, it'll probably be sooner than that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'd say probably maybe May, June, I think, we'll hear something.
Yeah, we'll probably hear it come, Iotacon at the latest, AX at earliest.
Yeah.
I just get the sense that they thought the waters were inviting enough, and they came too early for that. But who knows?
Well, I know. They're invited, and it's just you gotta know.
I really don't think they are for a Japanese company like this. I mean, Aniplex is, you know, you say they know what they're doing, but I feel like they've probably made a lot of concessions that they ordinarily wouldn't have, and probably got in trouble with it with the home company.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, just to stick around.
Well, yeah, but a lot of their decisions are also coming from Japan.
Hmm.
You know, instead of say like, you know, since their parent company's over there, and same thing with Pony Canyon USA. You know, they're probably beholden to what their parent company tells them.
But I can guarantee you that anytime they've lowered the price, it was not the parent company's. It was their decision, but they wouldn't have been happy with it.
Definitely. Yeah, there's probably a lot of pressure there, like, given the conservative nature of the parent company.
Yeah, I don't blame Aniplex for what they do, because, just like you said, that's their job is to try and raise the local perception of what the value of their product is, and it's not an easy thing to do.
No. And I mean,
whereas I think Pony Can's just like, we're just going to slap the same price on that we do in Japan and see what happens, you know?
Pretty much, yeah. It's like, I hate to say it, but I think they kind of went in there thinking they're not going to make money off of this. Like, they probably went in there saying, this is going to be what we try to get. If not, we're just going to sit back and make money off licenses again. Aniplex, they at least get stuff that, you know, they get stuff that people like, too. Like, and on top of that, they make a huge effort to get onto everything. I have to give them credit for this. If it's one of their shows, even if their Blu-rays are priced exorbitantly, it's on Crunchyroll, it's on Hulu, it's on Netflix, it's on Toonami. They get it.
It's part of their model. They have to have high awareness in order to make those sales.
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, they do try to get on everything.
Yeah. I do respect that.
Yeah, I have to give credit where credit's due, too. I mean, because, you know, now with, you know, the Netflix getting, you know, kind of getting more anime again. And, you know, it seemed like every week we were seeing, you know, oh, look, there's another Aniplex title on Netflix. Because that's how I watched SAO. Well, the first season, and I sucked to Crunchyroll the second one, but
that's how I watched Madoka Magica.
Mine was through less legal means, but believe it at that.
I didn't really care enough to, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't care enough to fans of it.
I just downloaded the Blu-ray rip or something, and I'm like, and then I got done with it, and I'm like, not for me.
Yeah.
I didn't care for any of the characters that,
yeah.
I mean, it was spoken nice like a true show. Pirate.
I mean, it was a nice looking show. I'll give credit there, but I just wasn't like, I just didn't care about any of the girls. And that's like, if I don't care about them, then, you know, why do I care about the show then?
Oh, that scene with Tomoe Mami was pretty awesome. The way she, you know.
Is that the one that got her head cut or bitten off?
Yeah.
I gotta admit that was.
That was awesome. That was really awesome. But anyway. Moving on. During the break, it was reported that Scarlett Johansson signed on to star in the live-action adaptation of Ghost in the Shell. When it was first reported, the film had not been greenlit. At the time, there was no financier. It was just kind of like in pre-production process, just barely getting the gears moving. It looks like in the time since then, like the week afterwards, things really kind of geared up since... On January 13th, it was reported that the film was being greenlit by, of all people, Disney Pictures. House of Mouse is going to be funding the film, and they scheduled it for an April 17th, 2017 release. So this is actually kind of interesting, considering that this is something that, kind of like the Battle Angel movie, kind of like a lot of those live-action anime films, it was talked about. We knew they were kind of being kicked around Hollywood for some nebulous in the future period. And it's, I mean, it's actually being made. And not only that, but it's being made by DreamWorks, who Steven Spielberg adores Ghost in the Shell, and he will more than likely have a hand in this at some point.
Yeah.
And Scarlett Johansson's a fantastic actress. And this is, given Disney deep pockets, this is going to be a movie with an actual budget. So, unlike, say, Dragon Ball Evolution, is, I mean, there's less chance of having another one of those.
I actually need to see that. I'm really just curious to see how really bad it really is.
Well, it's like watching a car fire in slow motion. It's horrific, but you can't help but watch. So, I kind of want to bring this topic up because, well, it's interesting and now it's happening. So what are your thoughts, guys?
You know where car fires go in slow motion because everybody grinds to a halt as they're slinking by at 5 miles an hour just to make sure that they get every possible image burned into their skull.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll say good luck. I mean, I know everybody's always pessimistic when these things come out. And yes, I know a lot of some of these anime adaptations have been garbage, and especially the video game ones have been really bad. To film have been bad. Though I do think at some point somebody is going to get it right. Will this be it? I don't know. I mean, I do hope Steven Spielberg does get his, at least gets involved, because at least since he's a fan of this franchise, you know, him on board, that at least might make it. I mean, it might make it good. I mean, because Steven Spielberg is a great director. I know he's not directing this. But, yeah, good luck to them. And if it were, you know, if it turns out good, maybe we might, you know, see more of these adaptations that might, you know, could work. But, I mean, we'll wait and see.
I think the elephant in the room on this is that nobody really knows why or can say why in any real detail Oshii's Ghost in the Shell anime worked so well. You know, if you look at the source, it's like, you know, Masamune Shirow is a great artist, but he really likes porn. And he writes a lot of it, and Ghost in the Shell is kind of borderline as far as that goes. And it's, sure, it's an interesting setting, interesting premise, but the way that Oshii was able to exploit that and make something that all of us consider a classic, I wonder if even he could do that again.
Good question.
The only other thought I had that I'll share real quick was I have nothing but respect for Scarlett Johansson. I think she's an amazing talent. That said, I think they chose her for her star appeal and because she's really sexy, and they don't really have a solid idea of where they're going yet.
Yeah, I mean, with Scarlett Johansson also, it's like you said, it's the star appeal, but also she is an incredibly powerful figure in Hollywood. She's one of the very few female actors that can get a film greenlit just by having her name attached. You know, it's, I mean, in Hollywood, an area that's basically, it's as blatantly sexist as you can get it sometimes. That's pretty big.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. I mean, yeah, I'm just kind of curious to how this is all going to turn out. I mean, I hope for the best.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I do hope it, I do hope for the best. I mean, my one big concern is the screenwriter for it just I got the name here. It's Bill Wheeler. His biggest achievement is a show called Empire, which was, like, middling at best. So, I mean, that's the one weak link that could sink this whole thing. Mm. Otherwise, they have some decent talent attached. Like, Rupert Sanders, who directed Snow White and Huntsman.
Yeah, he has a few good credits to his name, but he's still fairly green as directors go.
Yeah. Avia Rod, who oversaw, like, all the Marvel adaptations, at least he'll be able to guide this a bit better. But same with Stephen Paul, who did similar Marvel products and stuff like that. I mean, that's... My big concern is going to come from that script, because even if this is a big, flashy, like, well-done movie, if it's a shitty script, it's going to sink that whole production.
I do worry that they're approaching this like a superhero movie.
Yeah, and I kind of don't care for superhero movies. Yeah.
That does worry me, because, I mean, all of us who remember Ghost in the Shell remember it as something far... Like you were saying earlier, Oshii managed to do something really special with that, that even he probably can't even recapture. It's got its action moments, yeah. I mean, but the real meat of it was that whole questioning of what is the self and all that, you know? It's that whole metaphysical, meta-human side of it.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, creepy doll-like aspect of the more far-gone characters. It's... Well, and good cyberpunk tends to capture this pretty well, too. It's very gritty.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that would be my biggest concern.
I don't expect that this movie would establish the same kind of setting.
No, I don't either.
No, I foresee this being a very different movie than what a lot of people are expecting. Just because, well, it's Hollywood.
Yeah. But there's been a lot of there's been a lot of similar type sci-fi released in the years since Ghost in the Shell first came out. I mean, it's been a long time. We have a lot of prior art that they can draw on. So I think it's not a foregone conclusion that it's going to be a bad movie, but you know, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting is as we start getting some real, like, released material out of that, because it's going to be something that a lot of us keep our eye on, even if people don't have any interest in watching. It's kind of a big deal, considering that this is probably going to be the first live-action anime adaptation with, you know, a real budget and real talent behind it.
I think everybody's given up on waiting for James Cameron to do something.
Well, he's already... Wasn't he busy with pushing back Avatar 2?
He's always busy with something else. He's never going to give Alita the time of day.
No. He's just going to sit on that license forever. All right, and for our last topic tonight, the Academy of Motion Pictures and Science has announced their nominations for the 2014 Oscars. And usually that doesn't pertain to us, but the notable announcement for the evening is that Studio Ghibli and Isao Takahata's The Tale of Princess Kaguya was announced as a nominee. It's going to be competing against four of the films, which include How to Train Your Dragon 2, Song of the Sea, Big Hero 6, and The Box Trolls. So, I just figured I'd kind of get your opinions on how well of a chance to tell has of, you know, actually getting anywhere with this one.
Probably not. I mean, it's good they got nominated. Probably not gonna win. I mean, I think if you didn't have some of those other ones in there, I think it would have a better chance, but... Although I know a lot of people were surprised the Lego Movie wasn't nominated. Which I haven't seen. I actually haven't seen any of those films that are nominated.
Yeah, Big Hero 6 was a critical darling. It's very well loved by those that have seen it, and the critics kind of really started to really fawn over it. Which really surprised me, given that it's, of all things, this is a comic book adaptation, and it looks and feels nothing like it.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like this is, we're still kind of in the heyday of 3D animation being a viable art form, and anything that's not 3D isn't getting that much attention. I think if Kaguya was made 10 years ago, it would have been considered, you know, an amazing feat of whatever. Nowadays, I don't think, you know, okay, let me reel back a second. I think historically the Academy has not cared about animation at all. The only reason they have a category, I think, is because the public likes animation a lot. And they feel like they have to pay lip service to us or something. But I don't think that they ever really give it much attention at all. And they're the one exception I can think of is when Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture.
Right, and that's actually when they pretty much decided that it was going to be Best Animated, because unfortunately, animation scene is an inferior art form, so
yeah,
they don't want their prize Best Picture award going to a cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, you have a whole hell of a lot of actors and actresses and as voting members of the Academy. Why would they want, you know, animation is kind of like, I could see that they would consider that as below them. They consider it as less difficult or something. I don't know. I'm putting words in their mouth and I shouldn't, but, you know, screen acting has another dimension that animation doesn't have. The actors in animation are kind of limited by the animation budget itself, you know, as to what they can do. I don't know. I'm not able to articulate this very well, but I think that there's a lot of reasons why animation is not highly regarded in this sort of affair. I mean, I can't imagine seeing a sequel of anything being nominated for an Academy Award, you know, except for things like special effects, you know. And here we have a sequel to How to Train Your Dragon, which was, in my mind, just an okay movie to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree there. I mean,
I think they struggled to even list 4 or 5 animation titles every year.
Oh, definitely. And it's a shame, because if there is so much wonderful animation, it just gets outright ignored, you know. It's like, I'm not even just saying American, Japanese, I just mean animation in general. Like, they didn't need to have How to Train Your Dragon. There were dozens of worthy features out there that could easily have, you know, taken that slot. But
yeah, it's like, could you imagine the Academy ever nominating Iron Man 2 for anything?
No.
No.
You know?
No, not a chance. But yeah, I mean, you are right. It seems like even then, the best of lists tend to be the most convenient, if that makes any sense. Like, the stuff where, off the top of the head, all right, what were great animated movies this year? Okay, well, we had Big Hero 6, How to Train Your Dragon, and, you know, it's like, instead of sitting there and saying, rather than look at the circuits, look at, say, Cannes, the animation festival, the stuff where...
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like at least one good title, or one highly regarded title, comes out of France every year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, even if they took that... I mean, I understand the restriction. The restriction is a tough one, because to even place for an Oscar, you have to have a theatrical run that year. So that's definitely a gate for them, you know, because I'm sure that's what holds up a lot of titles, too. Because if you think about it, how many animated features get a theatrical run that aren't in the pockets of the House of Mouse or DreamWorks or Warner Brothers? I mean,
well, it has to be a run in the U.S., I'm assuming you're mean.
Yeah, that was the implication.
Yeah, few far between.
Exactly. I mean, you'll get a couple in the art houses, but those generally don't get recognized because, you know, art house.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised that,
Excuse me.
There we go, Song of the Sea, which is a, I think, I could be wrong, I think it's a Scottish film, if I remember correctly, ended up getting a nomination.
I do find that interesting about the animation category. It seems like it's a more likely place for foreign talent to be recognized, you know, even if it's just a nomination.
Oh, definitely, because, I mean, like, there's usually consistently at least one Japanese production and one from another country. Like, we've seen stuff like Sword of the Stranger, Summer Wars, stuff like that get right up there in the nominations, but the only...
Even
only
at that, some years even Japan doesn't have that much to offer. I mean, exactly. Sword of the Stranger is great, and I loved Summer Wars, but... you know, in a healthy movie making economy, you would have something that's better than Summer Wars every year.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that was recognized as still significant, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
I would never say it's a bad movie. I really enjoyed it.
And Mike, you were right, Song of the Sea is an Irish film.
All right, cool. Yeah, I thought so. It's based on Celtic folklore. Very good, by the way. I do recommend it. Like,
How dare you call it Scottish?
My money this year is on Big Hero 6 taking it, just because it was such a critical darling. This is a film that's like 88% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, or 86. It's some high, incredibly high number. So it's one that's going to be, you know, incredibly, incredibly popular with the Academy voters.
So How to Train Your Dragon 2 is going to win? That's what you're saying, right?
If so, I'd be very sad. Yeah, my money's on Big Hero 6. If not that, then Song of the Sea is going to be the Dark Horse winner.
It's kind of like you said. It's like they created the animation category so that they could ignore animation.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they did. They literally, the year after Beauty and the Beast placed, they announced Best Animated Feature. This is the same way that happened with the New York Times bestsellers list. Every time something that's not of their quote-unquote favorite norms reaches the tops of the bestsellers list, they create a new category. Naruto or Bleach, one of those sales started placing in the top 10, they make a manga bestsellers.
Yeah. For a while, I was surprised they didn't create a new best actor who isn't Sean Penn category.
it's a prestige thing because these groups can't bear to see something that's quote unquote beneath them taking their lunch. So they kind of give them their own little playground to play in and disqualify them from the real world.
Yeah, well, I regret the comments I made about stage actors and screen actors looking down on voice actors. I don't know that that's actually true, but you know, a lot of the Academy are actors, and animation doesn't seem to get the time of day, so I think there's something there.
Definitely. And not only actors, but there's also a number of critics in the Academy, and I mean, we've all seen how a lot of critical voices respond to animation.
Yeah, well, even things like the I don't remember what they call the term, but things like the Gollum animation in the Lord of the Rings movies, where The motion capture they used was very sophisticated. It even picked up facial gestures and everything. So their argument was that it's practically the same thing as screen acting in almost every way. And, you know, even at that, it's still just considered animation.
Exactly. Yeah, it was completely mocap and impressive at the time. It's still impressive today.
But what was the film again?
It was Two Towers when they first
revealed Gollum. Yeah, talking about Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Well, I've never seen Lord of the Rings, so...
Yeah, their motion capture didn't just capture body movements. It also captured facial expressions. Mm. So it's very sophisticated. And they used that in Avatar, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Avatar was... kind of a dull movie, but very, very pretty. All right, and that's our show, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Look forward to another year of us talking at you. I'm Mike Ferreira, signing off.
This is Anthony Simpson, sign our bye-bye.
And I am Spartacus.
All right, and Spartacus commands you to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, rate, recommend us to all your friends. It really helps us out. Have a great night, everybody.
Do all of the things that a dead guy tells you. Trust me, it's worth it.